begin. Call to order, everybody. And we will start with a Pledge of Allegiance. Our flag is up here and to your left. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Go to item C, our land acknowledgement. The Alameda County Parks, Recreation, and Historical Commission recognizes and appreciates the Indigenous people who lived in this area for thousands of years in relative harmony. We'll go to item D and a roll call. Liz?
Commissioner Thomas, Commissioner Willis, Commissioner Menard.
Present.
Commissioner Felix is not currently present. Commissioner Farley.
Here.
And Chair Patterson.
Present.
You do have a quorum present.
Thank you very much. We'll go to item E. That is an open forum for any item that is not otherwise listed on this agenda. If you or anyone in the audience zooming along or not, if you have anything to say, this is our open forum.
We do have a speaker online.
Okay. Ed, please.
Leah Brew, you can go ahead.
Thank you. This is the Parks, Recreation, and Historical Commission, and it seems like the district that represents me over here in Fremont, it's called District 1. It's called Supervisor David Halbert. Seems like they're doing all they can to stymie and block all of those. So what are they doing exactly? Well, one of the things that deals with parks and recreation is the Niles Canyon Trail, which they're working on for many years. It was first pushed forward by Supervisor Richard Valle. But now they say, well, you know, we don't even want to have a Niles Canyon Stroll and Roll. That was historically held every 2 years. And this year we didn't have a Stroll and Roll. And, you know, and they don't even say that they're ever going to bring it back. So it seems like they're quietly trying to kill it off, even though it was very important for the community over here in Fremont and in Sinol and Pleasanton. They had thousands or maybe 10,000 people, maybe more, show up every time that was held. It was not only held every couple of years, every year or two. It was not every year. And similarly, there's a trail called the Bay Area Ridge Trail, again, Parks and Recreation, which is supposed to go through Vargas Plateau and then go down into the canyon, then go up along Garin, Pleasanton Ridge, and then ultimately would kind of feed into the Chouinard, from Garin to Chouinard Winery, which is coming up on your agenda today. Now, that Bay Area Ridge Trail is blocked by a legal obstacle at the border of Vargas Plateau Regional Park. It's going to be very difficult to open up more gates in Vargas Plateau to continue forward to connect the Bay Area Ridge Trail. And then another thing, since notice how they blocked the progress on the Niles Canyon Trail, they're also blocking progress on the historic Fremont to Sinol route, which is called Morrison Canyon Road. Now that's historic because it was set up in 150 years ago, in 1877, in a handwritten documents, they surveyed out this route, and it was dirt roads for many years, non-motorized trail. At that time, there were no cars, so I guarantee you, there were no motors on the road in 1877 or 1890 or 1899 for people to walk along that ridge route from Vargas Plateau over to Sinol. Well, what did the county do just a few weeks ago? They voted to give away the public road to a private landowner or give away the right of way, public right of way. They also blocked off the city's right of way for which is being used as a recreational trail, and that's illegal. So I'm calling this the county's action there was blatantly and flagrantly illegal. Thank you.
You, can I get your name, please?
Kelly Abreu.
Very much. Very much for your comments. Is there anyone else that wishes to item not on this agenda?
There are no other online speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Abreu. On to item F, approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. That was our October 2nd meeting. And I've read 5 minutes. On the any,
I believe there's a error on item three, appoint Parks, Recreation, and Historic Commission members to participate in a nominating committee. I believe it was Jackie who submitted her name, and she's recognized later, Jackie Felix, and it's got Commissioner Willis on there.
Should be changed.
No, it should be changed to Commissioner Felix.
I think it just, it's Commissioner Willis. I think it just said I seconded the motion for the committee.
Well, what it says here.
The vote was to have.
Commissioner and Commissioner, right. The second senator, Commissioners Willis and Menard volunteered to serve. And I think it was Felix and me that volunteered to serve.
Item three, sentence number two, Commissioner Felix and Menard. Volunteered to serve.
Okay. Move to accept the draft minutes as corrected.
I second.
Motion to accept the minutes. Can we do a...
Sorry, yes. Commissioner Thomas?
Aye.
Commissioner Willis? Commissioner Menard?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farley?
Aye.
And Chair Patterson?
Aye.
The minutes are approved unanimously.
We'll move on to item G, Chair and Staff Reports. The Chair has nothing to report. Does staff?
I just mentioned that Angelica is at a conference this week, and that's why she's not here today. She'll be back next month. So I'm happy to have a chance to be here with you today.
Sorry to not see Angelica. We're very happy to have you back.
Thank you.
On to item H, new business. We're going to go to item one. We do have some requests to speak for item one and two. We'll start with item one, Lorenzo Theater Restoration Update. We will start out. We had some people come. Heard that I acknowledged that. This.
Hey, is this on?
Yes. If it's red and it needs to be red.
It's flickering red when I speak. So it's perfect. Hi, my name is Jamie Orfanos. I'm with Alameda County's Community Development Agency, same agency that the staff here is with, but they're with the planning department. I'm with Economic and Civic Development. And thank you so much for having me here today. We also have the architect for the project, and she'll come up and speak in a moment, Naomi Maroglio with Architectural Resources Group, and we refer to them as ARG. I'm just so happy to be here today because I feel like we have good news and just a wonderful, nice thing to present about as opposed to, like, I don't know, people demolishing things that you don't want them to demolish or other things. So I don't recall when the last time was that we were here, but it was certainly before the pandemic. And we actually have good news and productive forward movement with the Lorenzo Theater. I do know that Liz McGillicott had been updating the PRHC along the way with, hey, how are things going? Because we had a fire in 2020. The Lorenzo Theater is on Hesperian Boulevard in San Lorenzo in the commercial corridor there, the real heart of San Lorenzo. And the county purchased it, gosh, back in 2009. And we were sitting. We didn't have funding to do anything with it in particular. We were just getting ready to start to consider what we would be doing with it, with the facade, certainly, to kind of just brighten that up and make that look good. We had funding for that. And we had just hired ARG to work on these various aspects of the theater, making some small improvements and coordinating some potential developer improvements. And then we had a fire. So 3 months after we hired them, we had a fire in June of 2020, terrible fire. And I know that the PRHC has been following along. How are things going? We had a first phase of design and construction to deal with the fire emergency. They had to stabilize the building with big, big arms on it and remove all the debris and put in new trusses to reinforce the roof and the walls and everything, put in seismic reinforcement, do some little bit of work to the mural that did get damaged by the fire. And then it sat again while we went through the next phase of design. So now the design is complete. The construction contract with Plant Construction has started. They started work in September, just a light touch, and now they're really going full force. The first phase of work was approximately, and I'm probably giving you too much information, but I'm just so happy to be here, and I wanted to kind of give you the whole thing since you have been following along. The first phase of work was approximately, $5 million plus soft costs. This next phase is $17.8 million. So it's a lot of money. The first phase was primarily insurance related, and we are grateful to Alameda County for having insurance on this beautiful building, and we were able to do that first phase. The second phase is also still fire rehabilitation and is mostly funded by insurance, except that the county is funding the exterior facade, the marquee, the tower, the ticket booth, all of these lovely things that we think of for these grand old movie palaces. The intent of Alameda County is to not just bring this back as a film theater where you know, have a little ticket and you pay and you go and watch 2 hours and have some popcorn and you leave, because those aren't successful anymore. But what the intent is to do is to have it be very multifaceted, have a diverse array of entertainment options there. Perhaps it's a public-private partnership. We just don't know yet. But what we've tried to do in the design process of this rehabilitation is to consider those future options of live entertainment, film, banquet, wedding, beer pub, who knows, to keep it more wide open. And the other thing that this time, due to the fire happening, has required for the insurance to address is to bring the building up to code. So again, that first phase, we did all of the seismic reinforcement. That building is safer than any of our houses. It's very safe right now. It's brand new, spanking, seismically reinforced. But now this second phase will bring all of the other ADA and code upgrades to the building. So you'll have the proper ADA throughout. You'll have other code upgrades like the HVAC system, all of the mechanical, electrical, plumbing, that'll be up to date. And then we will be installing bathrooms because the bathrooms were also lost during the fire. And then we have what's called a warm shell, meaning we're ready for the next step, which will be in the future, which we'll come to you and present on at that time. But we're at least, we'll be through the fire rehabilitation portion. And while all of that's happening on the inside, on the outside, it's going to be like, remember when the Fox got all dolled up? They didn't have the money to do anything on the inside yet, but they dolled up the front so that they could at least present something beautiful and get people excited. So all of the neon and the ticket booth and the marquee and the tower, all of it's going to be fresh and lovely. And so that's what we're here to present today. And Naomi is graciously attending this meeting because she's the expert and she'll talk all the say all the proper things to just walk you through what we're up to there. We also would love it if at any time the PRHC or planning staff would like to come see the theater. We can, even during construction, maybe during the mural rehabilitation portion next year, meaning during like the January to May sort of time period, we'd be happy to tour you in the theater. The silver lining to all of this is that the beautiful murals that really make this building and make it historic and make it important remained, and only about 3 feet, about a 2.5 foot border all the way around got eaten up by the fire, meaning it's like fuel, all that wood up at the top because the fire was burning at the roof. So it's like this all the way around. And it was the least impactful on the murals. So the murals themselves, by the grace of someone, were maintained and now ready for rehabilitation. So again, we'd certainly love to have you. And as we get into things that are more sort of aesthetic and you can kind of, you know, it's fun to look at those things, we can reach out to Angelica and Liz to invite you out. And they have hard hats and vests and they'd be happy to accommodate us at that time. So thank you.
Comment, one of the headers on the roof has my signature on it.
Oh, did you come to the beam signing, Mr. Menard? Oh, good.
My signature's up there. And
oh, yeah.
It was a photo of me doing it was in East Bay Times.
Fun. And did any of you come to the groundbreaking? We had a little groundbreaking.
Oh, I wasn't able to.
I saw it before the fire, too. I got a tour of it before the fire. Somebody gave me an opportunity to go through it. And,
yeah.
And it's a beautiful building. I'm so glad you're preserving it. Thank you.
Thank you. In August, we had a little groundbreaking. It was ceremonial. You know, there was no real ground broken, but really the big party, and you're invited, and you'll, you know, like with a VIP invitation, will be at the ribbon cutting. And we'll probably have a couple of things. We'll have like a marquee lighting and then a ribbon cutting for the whole building. So we'll make sure and invite you to both.
Have you been to some of the other theaters that have had successful renovations? Like Alameda is wonderful. If you go there, it's really a great venue. They have parking. They have a restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice. I would go around to the ones that have really successful. Yeah.
Because... Thank you for asking that. Yes, we absolutely did. And I'll tell you about those in a second. But Ms. Maroglio, she actually, her team designed that renovation at the Alameda Theater.
Yeah.
So aren't we lucky ducks? I mean, and I, as terrible as the fire is, we're just so pleased that we are able to work with ARG to go through this effort because they are historic architects. So, and also she's very measured in her approach to that in the sense of she's looking at the requirements of the historic, the state, the Secretary of State's requirements, but also making sure to interpret them properly and make sure that we're abiding by them, but also being flexible about how we need to sort of follow that. So we're so lucky to have all the knowledge of herself and her other associates on the project. And yes, we've been to, of course, the Alameda Theater. It's stunning. I live in Alameda, and so I'm really familiar with that one. But we've traveled far and wide, and we're actually traveling to others. We've gone up to a sister theater of the Lorenzo up in Red Bluff. You probably don't even know where Red Bluff is. It's between Chico and Redding, right here. And it's very well endowed because of the almond farmers that are up there. They've really taken on supporting their little downtown in Red Bluff. It's very cute. And the theater is adorable and beautiful. And they reuse it in a similar way that I explained, where they're using it for a number of different things. There is the California Theater out in Pittsburgh. Beautiful theater. Oh, they also worked on that one. And that one also has a foundation, and it has an interesting partnership that we might want to replicate, which is a city foundation sort of partnership, and where the city owns it and then a foundation runs it. And it's very, again, live entertainment, film, all sorts of things. But no
lecture series stuff like the one in Livermore. Yeah.
Yeah. There's one in Livermore as well. I've not been to the one in Livermore. You mean the Vineyard, the Vine?
Yeah.
I have not been to the Vine.
They have lecture series like.
Well, lecture series is yes. No, that's great. So that, and then we've looked at a variety of other theaters. An interesting one to go to if you're into this kind of thing, because you get to be like one of those people that's into classic cars and get kind of sort of nerd out on it, is Orinda. So the city of Orinda, when you go through, it's also a sister theater to the Lorenzo. The lobby and the candy area, the bathrooms, none of that's the same. But as soon as you go into the auditoriums and you just close your eyes and you open them, you think you're in the Lorenzo as to how it's set up. Doesn't have our beautiful murals though. So the Lorenzo is going to be quite the grand dame. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Do you have another question, Ms. Willis?
A quick question.
Sure.
So did the fire change the plans? I mean, you had some time between when the fire happened and when you were able to hire the ARG and the architect. Did the plans change during that period?
The ARG was hired right before the fire happened. And the plan at first was for them to look at all of the things we had been thinking about with improving the facade, and let's get that going. Let's do a facade improvement project, basically. And to look at some other things that a proposed developer was considering and see how that all meshes, make sure that we're staying true to the historic nature of the theater. Then ARG had to pivot. So we had the architect on contract, but they had to pivot because of the fire and go into full debris removal, seismic sort of bracing stabilization and then into seismic renovation, rehabilitation, and all this other stuff that they weren't planning on. But that's how the project pivoted. The other thing that was able to pivot was, well, now we have all these options. And so to still stay true to the historic nature, but make it flexible for the future was really the focus of the design effort. And ARG will discuss how they thought that through, and you'll see some things that really are gonna facilitate the future benefit of the theater. Yeah.
Like a great plan.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
This is Commissioner Thomas. I just wanted to say thank you for keeping us updated in San Lorenzo. So I'm very, very familiar with just the building. All love. Appreciate the numbers. I know you said it's probably too much information, but us type of people, we actually don't mind the excess information, including the number.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. All right.
Just to kind of put some visuals to what Jamie's just described, and I just want to echo Jamie's excitement with what's going on with the theater, the dedication and the just the outpouring of love for this building. It would just be a building if it wasn't for the community. And so seeing everyone who came out to the groundbreaking was really, really so understand what community said it is, and be thrilled to be. So, do I move? Okay, let me know.
By the way, we have monitors here, but there is no stream detected, so we're not seeing what's behind me.
We have IT working on it. You could turn your chairs around.
You can
if we have the hard copy, we're good.
Okay.
You're going.
Behind you on the wall, so
yeah. And me. So as Jamie described, these are just the visuals. Sometimes it's hard to imagine what really occurred back in June 2020. There is efforts of firefighters and mission of the interior, but we were thrilled that that the mural survived. It was truly miraculous when you look at these images. Oh, just kind of an overview. This was the fire damage in June 2020, and next. And then this is the end of the roof reconstruction and the structural stabilization phase that went on from 2020 to about 20. Is pretty much what it looked like when we started construction. So next, and there was, you know, one of the benefits is that the building would have required seismic strengthening, and we were able to accomplish, would have needed outfilling to the way the houses and walls were stabilized. So it was a benefit that we looked at that. So the proposed design, Commissioner Willis, you asked if things had changed. It always, the focus was this mixed use and multi-faceted, flexible balcony. Prior, we were in a multi-level balcony with elevator access to the top. You can see it's a wider. And then from that cross aisle, which is about in the middle, forward towards the left, it's towards the left. There are three different levels, as we call it. Again, levels that have ADA access through these ramps that are shown, and kind of maximum flexibility, or it can be standing. Seating being set up. So that floor level, extremely flexible, going for any possible use. Next. Also work together with the community, I guess, on selecting the colors for the marquee and option of some of the elements that are original to the building. And this is the color scheme that we're moving forward with. And we're also doing some detailed restoration of all of these exterior elements. We'll be reconstructing the ticket booth. The poster cases will be rehabilitated, marquee and all of the neon, both on the marquee and on the tower, will be rehabilitated and reinstalled. We are introducing, instead of traditional neon, it'll be an LED, exactly the same, more sustainable, less energy, and a little safer. And so that is one of the modern interventions. Yeah. It's actually a terrazzo that comes up from the floor with a tile accent band. So yes, those are still there. And so where tile is missing, we'll be replacing it. But yeah, most of that does exist. And then within the historic marquee that we're rehabilitating, we'll be inserting, instead of the fixed letters that have that are attached and changed, it'll be a digital reader board. And this is quite common with theaters that are being rehabilitated. It gives a little more flexibility. And more visual interest, yet it sits within the framework of the historic marquee. And this is a nighttime version. We're working with the arrow sign on the LED, the neon, we still call it. And these are nighttime versions. We're studying the, you know, different color options for the neon. We do know that the Lorenzo lettering, the neon still exists. We know that that is white. And we're doing some research right now on the colors that might have been on the marquee itself. The actual neon is missing, but we just have access now to the inside one of the marquee boxes. And so they must have snapped it off. And so we do have some We do have some remaining neon. We might be able to figure out what the color was. And then also moving forward with a temporary mural through the art. And so this is the plan for the front of the building. It is. Back. These are just some study views as we were developing the interior. We will have railings at each of the levels. You can see how the balcony will be reconstructed without, this is with no furniture, no people, but gives you a sense. We're reconstructing the ceiling. Was really distinctive with they're called anemostats. Those were the big mechanical registers that the heating system, and they were in a concave portion that sat up into the ceiling, and so all of that will be reconstructed, which you can see. Their view. Up in the balcony, and then looking towards the stage. All of the missing decorative elements in the ceiling, and as Jamie described, the top band above the mural will all be replicated. And so we have the striping, we have the all the detail of those elements. We had great photography of the interior, so we were able to estimate dimensions and recreate it. So this is actually included in the construction documents. So the contractors have this, just like they have the structural steel and the handrails and everything to ensure that the original details are all replicated. And the most exciting part is the restoration of the murals. So we did a pretty extensive analysis. They're very delicate. Both they have the multiple layers. So they have the paint layers that you can see just in natural light. And then they also have the coatings for the black light. And so each layer will be cleaned and restored. So it's quite a job. It's like twice the work. That concludes the.
So I would like to know who did the original murals when?
They were original, or 1947 was so right after it was opened, and it's Anthony Heinsbergen. Is the artist. He is well known, but there are not many remaining. I know it's the only one in Northern California, but he, yes, he was a specialist in the black light medium. Happen to have it right here. Heinsbergen.
My name's James. I have a question. Being that they had a fire, is the building going to be ADA compliant? Because a lot of times you can't do it because a lot of the old buildings aren't ADA compliant. But
yes, and if you notice, I mean, there's there'll be a lift.
I heard about the elevator, yeah.
The elevator will get you to the top level of the balcony. And then there will be a access to a lift to get you up to the level. I don't know if we can go back to the maybe one of the early sections. Maybe
so they have open sections like Alameda where they have the handicap seating. Oh, okay.
So off of that cross aisle are loggias that you'll be able to just have access. So they'll be they're kind of separated. So right off that, and then there's a ramp down to the middle level, and then there's a ramp down to the lowest level. And a lift to get back up to the platform level.
That's great because then everybody can have a chance to utilize the facility.
And the goal is now that you spread out the seating to all the as many of the experiences as you can. So if someone doesn't want to sit in the front, that they have access to the front. If someone a disabled person wants to sit in the back, so that more variety in the seating options. Yeah, but it's an interesting configuration originally, because you come in at street level, you go up steps to the cross aisle, and then you go down steps to the bowl. So it was a little trickier than many theaters that I've worked, like Alameda Theater. You come in, and at that level, you go into the auditorium.
Yeah,
and here you have to go up and then back down. Anyway, it was fun.
One more question. Since it's a historic building, I'm assuming that you can use the historic building codes on some of the aspects of this. I'm hoping that you're doing that, item one. I'm seeing a nod, so I'm assuming that's true. And the other thing is the Lorenzo, whatever it is, the signage out in front that goes up and down. You're putting LEDs in there. Are you going to have the flexibility to have them different colors? No,
these are single colored LEDs.
A single color LED.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It would have been the price point for getting the ones that you can program or any kind of movement. So it's a single color static.
They can flash on and off and that kind of stuff, huh?
They're static. They'll go on.
Stay on.
And stay on. And
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
A lot of Route 66 is like that. So.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do you have any other comments or questions for our speakers? We do.
Just had to add one thing that I forgot to add earlier, which is, Randy Waggy is here from the foundation, Lorenzo Theater Foundation. Randy and a whole group of folks have been advocates for this theater for years, and they've held on with us, like attending meetings and looking at all of these colors and all of these, sort of things that have happened. They cried when the fire happened with us, that we're all there together. So I do want to acknowledge the Lorenzo Theater Foundation, and we've worked with them throughout before the fire and throughout this whole process. And now we have the theater advisory group, which is partly the foundation and then some other community members as well. So just without that theater advisory group and the foundation, we could not have done this. And we could have done it, but would not have felt as if we were getting the community input that we needed. And also to Mr. Menard's question about using the historic building code, we also had very excellent coordination with Alan Tam, the public works building official. So the building official for Alameda County has met with us a number of times and understands the full sort of scope of this project and the historic nature, and has been very helpful in getting through the building permitting process.
Thank you. And thank you for the commission too. You guys did a great job.
Have some speakers. I'd like to take the speakers that are present, and then we'll go to the Zoom. A number of speakers that wish to speak on item one and item two. The people that have requested to speak on item one, I'll choose first. First speaker would be
So haven't been here in a long time. So I'm Dr. Ann Maris. I'm an educator, community advocate, environmental advocate. I'm a biochemist. And so the Lorenzo Theater, I just wanted to mention how important it was in my childhood. And I'm so happy that it's going to be a really important local spot for people where we're lacking a lot of places for entertainment and kids need somewhere to go. The only thing that I didn't hear mentioned was recognition of the land that it's on. So right there at the Lorenzo Theater, that was all land where the indigenous people, the Ohlone, you know, it's a lot of it's landfill. So when the rains would come, San Lorenzo Creek would flood and there would be, you know, different pathways. Right now, the creek is all channeled into a cement channel. But back, I don't know, as little as a few hundred years ago and as long as many thousands of years ago, tribes lived there. The Ohlone didn't store their food, but rather they were seasonal. So they would travel to the shore and get the shells and the mussels and stuff, or they would gather the acorns. And so when someone is buried there near the theater, which a body was found, when they were digging for power lines on, near the self-storage business, that tells us that at least at that part of the shoreline, there was enough land that they would have buried someone there. And that just tells us and shows us that, you know, there were people that here before us. So I would be really happy to see some sort of recognition of that and of the land that it's on. And that particular burial was sort of interesting because she was found with shells, purple shells, which normally weren't seen in the Ohlone burials. So they can determine whether it was Miwok or Ohlone based on whether the body is, you know, bent or straight. And as I recall from that article, there was some confusion there because it was really unusual. So that and the fact that the Ohlone didn't traditionally travel far really makes it interesting. And thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about plaques since we're talking about it today as well. But I think some acknowledgement somewhere in the building. I'm sorry. I'm kind of... okay, thank you. But some acknowledgement on the building of the Native people who live there. And also, again, back to the artist. I think that's pretty amazing. The person did the mural technique that the person did. Be great if there was some explanation, dedication. As well. Thank you again. This is a fabulous project, and it's, as Jamie said, it's great not to just hear about something getting demolished, but something that's stunningly beautiful and a wonderful asset to the community. So thank you.
To move on, as Commissioner Thomas, I just wanted to acknowledge the community member who brought that to our attention. That is something that I feel like we. Times all details.
Commissioners, if I could interrupt, I believe we have more speakers. We have two speakers online, and I believe there might be some more in the room. Is that correct? We should finish our finish the public comment before the commission continues the discussion.
Our next speaker is Mimi Dean, and we will stick to a 3-minute limit because of
hold it. Great. I'm Mimi Dean. And I live in San Lorenzo, and I've been there for about 35 years. I was a middle school teacher for 32 years with the San Lorenzo Unified School District. And I have watched that our poor theater sit empty and just, you know, kind of fading into the background for so many years. And so this is a glorious project that we, most of us in San Lorenzo, are so excited for. And I have to say that Dr. Maris, what a great piece of information she brought to us, right? But don't you want the rest of the story? Like, I want to know. I need to know now, right? So my comments are short. I feel like this is a great project. I feel like we're so lucky. The town where I grew up in back east, we had an old theater that was completely destroyed when I was a kid. And now it is a premier site for all kinds of music and entertainment. It's in Huntington, New York on Long Island. And it's called the Paramount Theater. And I can just see, you know, this venue becoming something extraordinary for our communities. I do have questions. Am I allowed to ask a question? I wanted to ask about the seating because I was unsure if the seating was the only stationary seating was up in the balcony and then everything else is movable. Is that correct? Is that?
Well,
actually, we need.
Okay, I need to keep.
Well, to speak into the microphone so you're right. The response ends up in
okay,
the recording.
She does that.
Record. Yeah.
Come on, you can use my time.
No, why don't you finish? Do you have any other questions?
That was my main thing, is I feel like this is a great project. I'm so glad that it's here for you guys. And I'd like to, if you could talk more about the seating and uses and things like that, I'd be excited. Thank you.
Well, let's just say we've created the canvas, so it would be how someone wants to use those levels. It could be permanent seating in the balcony. We have seen venues be successful with permanent seating in balconies and flexible on the lower level, or it can be flexible throughout. So it really depends on how the whoever is operating it, and it could change from one you know, one event to the other.
Thank you. Move on. And I won't, I get to pronounce first names at this point in time. I'm looking at Petra. You also wanted to speak on item one. We have a 3-minute time limit. Welcome.
Thank you much. This is my first time speaking, so thank you for having the time. I was really excited to see that this was part of the agenda. I grew up in San Leandro. I went to school at St. Joachim's. So constantly on the trip over, I'd always ask my parents about that theater there. Growing up, my parents always had me invested in movies. My dad used to work at a theater. My mom is big on historical sites. And so to learn more about the history of it growing up, learning about how it was burned, yet it was still kept up. It's just exciting to see. I love going to independent theaters. I love going to city-owned theaters. So hearing that you previously worked on the Alameda Theater, I'm really excited for the future. That's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, Randy. You have 3 minutes.
I grew up in San Lorenzo, and Lorenzo Theater was always empty and vacant. I think I did get in there when I was about 11 or 12, and then it closed in 82. So it went on for quite a long time. I moved away, I came back, and then I asked Jamie, like, 10 years ago, maybe 2015, 2016, can we get in there and start doing tours? And she said, yes. And we were so excited. And then it's probably one of the tours that you went on. We would do that every year. And then we had the fire and we were all super devastated and crying and like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? So thank God, thank goodness. It is a miracle. We are so lucky that the Lorenzo is going to be restored to its original beauty. Also, I had heard that the murals were painted and it took like a month and somebody stayed at somebody's house and he worked with a crew on both sides. When we started doing the tours, that's the other thing that blew me away. We went in there and then you switch the light and you're like, oh my God, these murals are one of a kind. Nowhere else, maybe in the world, to have something so beautiful. And they cover both sides. So we are so lucky, so excited. When I think about it, you know, the flexibility that they've come up with the architecture. I went to the Guild Theater in Menlo Park, and a lot of that was kind of standing room and balcony is kind of fixed. So I could see that. And I'm sure they could get a lot more people in there when you have the standing room. But I just want to thank you both and ECD, Eileen, Jamie, Jamie working on this tirelessly. I kept asking her, what's going on? There's a year gap. I keep riding by there. It felt like nothing's going on. Now I go by and I'm so excited. You see 8, 10, 12 people. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's really important for San Lorenzo to finally have something good happen in our town. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We will now open it to the electronic audience.
Kelly Abreu, you can go ahead, please.
Thank you. The timeline for the theater fire and restoration is miraculously parallels the Notre Dame de Paris, which had a fire in April of 2019. The fire cost $1 billion. And so that's a year before this fire. And they got it rebuilt. They had the Pope or the President of France or whoever, they had everybody there in December of 2024. So that kind of gives you the timeline for what happens when you have a whole country behind you and people are really dedicated to doing these projects. They can get them. They can have a fire a year before you and get it done a year ago. And this project is going to take another year or two. Another thing to keep in mind on this is the health and public health, public safety of this project. We already heard all about the earthquake. Well, there's quite a bit. This is an assembly facility. The Community Development Agency has planners in it, and the fire department was there because there was a fire, right? So the fire department was very busy. And when they rebuilt this theater, they actually put in sprinklers and alarms. And, we could name off the people who are responsible for that. But unfortunately, I don't want to name the people in the Building Inspection Department of the Public Works Agency. And I don't want to name the people in the fire department because in 2018, they were out there over here at a facility near Fremont, a large assembly facility that shall go unnamed. And they did not put in sprinklers. And the facility has seating for 200 or 300 or 400 people, and it's brand new. And somehow the fire department of Alameda County Fire Department is unable to figure out what is an assembly facility and unable to figure out what are the fire sprinkler, and impose the correct fire sprinkler requirements for assembly facilities. So I really think that we need to really buckle down and really the Building Inspection Department and the Fire Department need to look at themselves in the mirror and ask yourselves, do we know how to apply the building codes and the fire safety and life safety regulations? Do we apply them as they should be applied? Thank you.
Thank you. For your comments, made a note of that. We'll move on to our next speaker.
Next speaker is former Commissioner Maria Maggion. Maria, you can go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you, staff. Liz, I appreciate it. I am former commissioner from District 3, and I'm also the vice president of the Hayward Area Historical Society. I do want to thank staff from the Economic Development Department and the Community Development Agency for continuing to do all this wonderful work and to give an update to this wonderful commission. One of the beautiful things that I love about San Lorenzo, I used to live in San Lorenzo as well, is how community comes together. I'm actually attending for item 2, and it was just so wonderful to see this item on the agenda as well. So I did attend the groundbreaking, and it was just so much joy overflowing. I encourage all the current commissioners on this commission, if you get a chance, take them up on their offer, go and visit the theater and see the beauty that's there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Comments? Is next speaker.
We have no more speakers online.
All right, that concludes the presentation then for the Lorenzo Theater restoration. Are there any comments that any of the commissioners would like to make at this time? Yes, Commissioner
Willis. I would just like to ask Jamie, what caused the fire? Was it ever determined?
Has not been determined, and the investigation is closed. It would seem as if someone did access the building through the there's a door in the front that was where film used to be delivered. So similar to you getting your milk delivered fresh every day on your doorstep, they would zoom by, open the door, put the film in this door, and like a little butler, what do they call it? A dumb waiter would take it up to the projection room, and then they'd zoom off to the next theater because, you know, they're on a route, like a newspaper route. And so it appears as if the person got up in through that dumb waiter area, that door, and then that sort of area in between two of the floors, and was doing something. We don't know. And it was not determined, but that was sort of the source. And it's adjacent to the tower, kind of that area of the building. The building did not have fire sprinklers. It was purchased as is by Alameda County, and it did not have fire sprinklers installed in it when it was built in 1942, 47. It will have fire sprinklers. It will have a fire alarm. It will have a security alarm. It will have all of the things that now you are required to have by code.
Does it have anything to protect it? This, James, anything to protect it now so that nothing like this happens?
Right now, and since the fire, it has had 24-hour security at the building via a system that's been very successful. It's a camera operated, but whenever there's any movement, it then alerts a human operator. The human operator reviews the movement, determines if it's an appropriate person or not. Typically, that means between like 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. and they enter the door with the code, and they're inside maybe looking around, and they have a clipboard, versus someone who's maybe cutting into the building in a hole or at 3 a.m. when we're not there. So they do a little bit of a determination, and then they make a noise, and then they speak over the warning, warning, you need to vacate the area. You're on private, you're trespassing, you're on private property. And then the next level is they send out their patrol, comes within 5 minutes. And then the next level is they send out the sheriff. So it's been a very successful security system. And then when the building is complete, it will have a more formal, permanent security system, but somewhat similar to that in the sense it'll probably be somewhat computer reviewed, human reviewed, and then different levels of intervention.
A question. Commissioner Thomas, Jamie, are there any current plans to piggybacking off of what our community advocate mentioned about acknowledging in types of the area? Are there any like to have any form of signage or acknowledgement or something like that that would be easy to view upon accessing the property or coming to visit it?
Thank you for the question. I did make note of it, of the comments from Dr. Maris, and also the PRHC's sort of positive thoughts about that. And we will need to look comprehensively at what plaques or plaque, large plaque or multiple plaques that will be on the building as it relates to it being a historic building, being a county building, perhaps being acknowledgement of the indigenous tribes. I don't know what the county policy is on any of that. So we have to look at all of that comprehensively, but I do appreciate the comments and will make note of them and express those to my director. So there's lots of plaque consideration. Yeah.
A note also, placards are usually Commissioner Willis or Menard's thing. I'm just following suits here.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you. And then I heard Linda Willis mention, oh, well, is there going to be a plaque for the artist? So it's sort of like county building, historic building, artist, wow, indigenous people, wow. You know, so all of that, and we have to think about how that, and then with the overlay of what is the county's policy, because I don't personally dictate that, and we have to see what that is. Yeah, but we took note of it and we'll make sure it's tracked. And we'll certainly be returning to the PRHC. I will make sure and check in, as I mentioned at the beginning of this meeting, with Liz and Angelica when it is an appropriate time to get you all in. You don't necessarily have to all go in together, so we can coordinate like a couple of your schedules at a time. But they're there Monday through Friday, you know, 7 to 3:30. So we have big windows of time, perhaps, if work schedules and things don't conflict in that time to lead you through. So we'll be in touch about that. And then any future phases of the development. So this is bringing us to a warm shell. We do not have a developer. We need to go through that next step of operator or someone, operator slash developer, that is interested in taking this on. And then further details will start to evolve in the interior of the theater. But certainly we'll be updating the PRHC, whether it be at minimum by email every so often, just through staff.
Question. Do we have interest from an operator?
Do not have interest at this time, but we will be sending out an RFI, a request for information, to various, just sort of trying to cast a little bit of a wide net to various operators to see what the interest might be. And then based on that, go into a more detailed process.
Consider the Park and Rec District?
You're considering many options, but none of them are public, so I can't express them. Sorry. Thank you for your question, though. Good question.
As Chair, I'll wrap this item up by saying that we have not had this many people in this room at this meeting since I was chair, since I became chair, and even before then. So the interest that this theater and its location and its geographic proximity to an indigenous people's area is amazing. It's outstanding. It's to be applauded, and hopefully we'll find an operator so that building lives and breathes in the community. I personally have family that have lived in San Lorenzo well before anyone in this room, and it pleases me to go down Hesperian and see that phoenix rise. So we will conclude item one now. We have no more speakers. They all got a chance.
No more speakers online.
Thank you very much. Now go to item two. The Save Sky West as Open Space in the City of Hayward from Destruction, a presentation, which will be made. We have three requests to speak, and we will do that after the presentation. So do we have a presenter? Oh, that would be you again.
Mimi Dean. And there's a whole group of us that are, we call ourselves SOS, Save Open Space Sky West. We've been working on saving Sky West for about 4 years now. We started off as just me and Randy, and it has evolved now into thousands of people have signed our online petition. Hundreds of people have signed our paper petitions. We have college kids. We have high school kids. We have, it's a multi-generational effort to save Sky West as open space. So let's take a look, and I hope that you can turn around because the pictures are pretty amazing. All right. So that weird little space that looks like a staircase that's at the end of the runway. Yeah. And you can see it on your paper packet too. I know. I wish I had my thingamajig, my LED thing. So that is Sky West, that weird looking step thing. And it's located right next to the Hayward Executive Airport and right behind Kennedy Park. And then the dark gray area is the Ora Loma Marsh and like the open space that belongs to Hayward, Hayward Area Rec, East Bay Regional Park District, and Ora Loma. Okay, so that just kind of puts it in a geographic perspective. And the Bay Trail is all along the side. I know I'm bad. The left side. And that's where Ora Loma's horizontal levee project is. Okay, next slide. So what is SkyWest? SkyWest is 126 acres. Of magnificent open space. Look at those beautiful trees. That picture on the with all the clouds, that was taken by Randy. And there's lots of mature trees, all kinds of shrubbery out at SkyWest, providing habitat for all kinds of little friends. Next slide. So it really is a treasure. It's magnificent, whether it's morning, whether it's afternoon, whether it's twilight. It's a magnificent place that we've got to really save it for our generation and future generations. SkyWest is a former golf course, so it's really flat and it's really perfect for people of all abilities. Up until about a year ago, I was in a walker and a wheelchair and a scooter. My leg was broken. And I was able to get out there and go on the flat areas because I can't really, and I still to this day really can't walk up and down hills very well. So this is a really amazing space for people of all abilities and all ages, people that are pushing their strollers, people that are taking their grandparents out for a walk on a Sunday afternoon, kids that are riding their bikes. We really look at it. And when I say we, this is the whole SOS SkyWest group. We really would love to see more benches. We don't see any kind of development for this area. We see it as a place of rest and relaxation and observation of all the different species that live there. So benches for observation is kind of the one thing we'd like to add. Next slide, please. Look at this beautiful, this is wintertime at SkyWest. This is what it looks like. And you can see that we're looking for a place of quiet reflection and serenity. That's our vision. Next slide, please. Look at this. Look at the infrastructure that's already there. It used to be a golf course, so they would ride around in those golf carts, right? So whereas a lot of the trails are kind of beat up now, there's all kinds of stuff growing in them and they're getting cracked and stuff like that. The basic infrastructure is really there. Not only the trails, but the electricity, the water, Ora Loma and East Bay Discharges Authority pumps the water, the recycled wastewater. Gets pumped up by East Bay Discharges Authority and it fills up the three ponds where the Western pond turtles live. So we just want to have more trails for walking and strolling and observing. Next slide, please. There's lots of native species living there and lots of pollinators. Look at those dragonflies. Can you believe that magnificent picture? I know my friend Christine took that picture. Next slide, please. Here's what's amazing about SkyWest. I don't know if the city of Hayward didn't know this or they chose not to know this. We're unsure. But SkyWest is the number one monarch butterfly overwintering site in the entire East Bay. It is site number 2867. It is being counted and it has been counted for decades by the Xerces Society. I was out there last week with a bunch of people and we were counting butterflies. And it's the number one site in the East Bay and it's number five in the state of California. Three are in Santa Cruz, one's in Pacific Grove, and number five is in Hayward. Yeah. All right, let's go. Here we go. This picture was taken by James Watts. He's a local Hayward resident. And like I said, the monarchs have been counted here for decades. And what's really worrisome about Hayward's plans for where the monarchs are is that once you take down the trees where the monarchs are, it's not like they're going to move to the next set of trees. That's not the way it works. They're not going to be coming back. So it's really important that we save this grove where these butterflies are. And when we were out there last week with the butterfly counters, we found what we think might be another grove, we're hoping. All right, so look at that. That is what a cluster of butterflies looks like when they're trying to stay warm. And we go out there early in the morning to count them when they're kind of all hanging out together.
Who's the left?
Yes. Okay, next slide, please. So there it is, site 2837. As you can see, it's really close to the Oraloma Marsh. It's really close to the railroad tracks. And it's to the west of the runway zone in Sky West. Sadly, that area is where Hayward wants to put in a whole bunch of industrial buildings. So it's a problem. It's a problem. Yes. Okay, where it says 2837.
Sorry, Commissioner Willis, could you speak into the mics, please, so we can record your question?
I'm a little unclear where the buildings, the
you know
airport
what?
Would be built.
It's probably in the next slide.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, well, it's in one of the next slides. How about that? So here is a Western pond turtle. They are our only native California turtle. In the state of Oregon, they are on the endangered species list. They're not yet on the endangered species list here, but the Resource Conservation District is running a study of them out in Livermore, and they are studying them, and they are trying to replicate habitat for them out there. These animals do need permanent or nearly permanent aquatic environments like ponds to survive. And we need to save the ponds at Sky West for these turtles. Next slide. So this is just, I'm just showing you this beautiful picture of the turtle and its amazing reflection. I took that picture. And what the city of Hayward is thinking about doing, they're thinking about cutting down all the trees, filling in the pond, and paving over the whole area. Remember that Joni Mitchell song, right? Pave paradise, put up a parking lot. Yeah, that one. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what they want to do. They want to fill it in, and no more Western pond turtles. All right. Next slide. So we just don't really understand what will happen to the turtles when the ponds get filled in, and we don't really understand what will happen to the monarchs when the industrial complex gets built. That's our big questions that we have. And, you know, we just feel like we need to take care of the things that bring us joy, and other species bring us a lot of joy. Next slide, please. So a community survey was conducted in 2021, and it had three rounds of surveys. And as you can see, this is what most people, and this is from Hayward's website, this is from their consultant's website. You can see the name Kimby Horn in the corner. This is what people wanted. They wanted trails for running. They wanted like ponds for animals. They wanted bicycling. They wanted a dog park. They wanted a Frisbee park. They wanted community gardens. Does anybody see they want more hangers? Does anybody see that they want industrial buildings? No. This is what the community asked for right here. Open space, preservation of critical habitat. That's what the community asked for. Next slide, please. So our vision is to save SkyWest as open space for community benefit in the many ways that I've already spoken about it. Next slide, please. So sadly, this is Hayward's plan, all right? They want to cut down so many mature trees. And I don't know if you guys know, but for every like 50-year-old tree you cut down, you have to plant hundreds of 6-inch trees to sequester the same amount of carbon. You can't just cut down a 50-year-old tree and think, oh, I'm going to plant three little trees and it's going to do the same thing. It doesn't. It doesn't do the same thing as far as sequestering carbon, as far as providing us with oxygen, as far as providing us with shade. It just doesn't do the same thing. And it doesn't do the same thing as far as absorbing water during rainstorms. They want to fill in our ponds. They want to destroy the critical habitat, bulldoze the amazing, gorgeous clubhouse that could be a beautiful community center, build industrial park close to San Lorenzo homes, build parking lots and hangars for people that ride around in the airplanes that don't live here. I did a public records request, and it turns out that 95% of the people that use the airport do not live in any of the local zip codes. Yeah. So that's like, to me, really like, wow, that's amazing, right? And allowing land use decisions in our communities to be made for people that don't live around here. Okay. Next slide, please. So Hayward's plans are an environmental disaster, and they're not in line with any of their plans and policies. For instance, they're looking forward 2040, their guiding principles in that plan, their climate action plan, their environmental justice element, the 100,000 trees for humanity plan, their sustainability plans, and their green image. I don't have all the information here because I had so many slides, I had to cut it short, I'm sorry. But I'm always willing to talk to people if they'd like to learn more about this. Next slide, please. So you're probably wondering, why is a lady from San Lorenzo who doesn't live in Hayward, why the heck does she get to have any kind of say about this? Well, here it is. This is from the Hayward's GIS on their website, okay? And as you can see, the area of influence of the airport goes over not only Hayward, it goes over San Lorenzo, Hayward Acres, Cherryland, Ashland, and parts of San Leandro. I know. So that's how, that's why we feel as an unincorporated community group that we have a say in this. And I think it's really important that we do have a say, and we did get the Hayward Airport and what's going on over there in the county environmental justice element because of this. That's right. I used to serve on the Eden Mac. So yeah. Okay. Yep. So next slide, please. So here we go. So here shows you Hayward's plans and what they're thinking. So as you can see, the runway comes in horizontally from the bottom there. And then the yellow area is what Hayward says must be the safety zones. And they've got the clubhouse in the safety zone. But if I'm going to show you another map that shows that that is actually erroneous, that clubhouse is not in the safety zone. And so all the trees in that whole safety zone will be cut down. And I have a big problem with it because if you look above the word FAA airport and you see that long stripe that goes across, that's actually a row of trees. Now that row of trees is protecting the people that live in the houses, isn't it? So I agree with safety, but I'm kind of feeling like the people on the ground need safety too. Okay, so I'm against cutting down trees that protect people in their homes in San Lorenzo. If you look over to the orange side, that is where all the butterflies live, the future business park. That whole area is going to be cleared out. There's going to be no more trees for butterflies. The butterflies will be gone. Okay. In the upper left corner, you're going to see they're giving us a little pocket park right next to the San Lorenzo Community Park, which is otherwise known as the Duck Pond. And then go all the way over to the blue area. And the blue area is where they want it. That's where the Western Pond Turtles live. And that's where they want to put in more hangars. All those buildings there that are like right against that blue area, those are all hangars. So they want to cut down all the trees there too. And they want to pave it and they want to put in more hangars. Okay. And then that little area is recreational development over there. So only 23 out of 126 acres will be saved for open space. Now, what did the community ask for? Open space. Community didn't ask for any of this other stuff. Next slide, please. Oh, this one, you can't, something's wrong with this. I don't know what happened to this slide. So let's move on. All right, so this is what it looks like today. And you can see all the trees. And you can see where the Duck Pond and San Lorenzo are. And I just wanted you to see what it looks like today and just see how many trees are there.
That's really proximity.
Speak into the microphone, please?
Yeah, it's really in close proximity to the regional park.
Yes, and Commissioner Farley, step one is save Sky West. Step two is make a connector between. You got it. That is step number two. All right. So, yeah, I just feel like we can make a really amazing trailway here. Let's go to the next slide. So preserving Sky West is an environmental justice issue. The A Street corridor is the most disadvantaged community in all of Hayward. And you know about the Quimby Act? Well, the Quimby Act says that we should have X amount. The minimum is usually 3 acres of open space per 1,000 residents. Well, this part of Hayward has 1/3 of an acre of open space per 1,000 residents, so about 11% of the minimum amount. San Francisco has 6.6 acres. Oakland has 3.7, and the gold standard is 10. So my question is, why are we building parks up in the hills where there's already thousands of acres of open space, like La Vista Park that's getting built? We have money for La Vista, $20 million, but we don't have money for Sky West, where the disadvantaged communities live. Us Flatlanders, we deserve open space too. Next slide. So this is just about climate action plan. This is just the fact that we need to reduce the heat island effect down in the flatlands. There's a lot of asphalt. There's a lot of buildings. There's a lot of industry in this area. And we need our trees to sequester the carbon and to reduce the heat island effect. Next slide, please. I went on a walk. I serve on the Oro Loma Sanitary District now. I'm on the board of directors. And we went on a tour of our First Mile project and our horizontal levee. And it was absolutely amazing. Mayor Salinas was on the journey with us, as well as Council Member Andrews. And it was great that they were there, because the scientists said again and again, that we needed nature-based, integrated regional solutions to battle sea level rise and climate change. And it made me feel so happy that both of those policymakers and decision makers were here to hear those important words, because it's true. That's what we need. Next slide, please. So this is just, I just wanted to show you what a horizontal levee is, just in case you don't know. Most levees are vertical, so the water comes in from the shoreline and crashes against, you know, like I saw in Santa Cruz today, the cliffs falling down, you know, because it's horizontal, right? The horizontal levee goes really far, like a half a mile. and it's full of all different kinds of native plants that absorb the water. So that's what a horizontal levee does. Next slide, please. And here is step two, Commissioner Farley. So this is actually a rendering that was done by EBDA, East Bay Discharges Authority, and HASPA, Hayward Area Shoreline Planning Agency. This is their rendering, not mine. And it is a bridge over the railroad tracks. And I have to tell you that the group that we're trying to work with, which is East Bay Regional Park District, they have done these bridges before. They've done one in Pinole. And they have done golf course conversions into parks. They've done that up at the Roddy Ranch up in like Antioch, Martinez. So this would be absolutely amazing if we could get really wonderful trails down in the horizontal levee, connecting the Bay Trail, connecting this to the San Lorenzo Community Park into Sky West. What a great trail all the way, and then connected to Hard's Creekway Trail that they're building all the way to Coal Canyon. What a great thing for our community. Next slide, please. So this is just, I just wanted to, we're coming to the end of the slideshow. I wanted you to see that there's really so much diversity. I mean, this is an afternoon picture and that's in the winter. This is a summer picture. You can just see that the trees and the grasses, all the things that we have down there. And there's so much opportunity with 126 acres to do so much more, restoring it to what it used to be, right? Before it was a golf course. Next slide, please. It's a birds at Sky West. In fact, there's a bald eagle there now. Next slide, please. I just love these pictures, so I had to show you the dancing great blue heron. All right, next slide. Okay, there's the bald eagle. Yep. And guess what? When we were on that tour 2 weeks ago, we saw the bald eagle at the tour. So now nobody can say me. No, there's no bald eagle. Yeah, there is a bald eagle, and we got the picture. So we have sound recordings. We have photographs of the bald eagle at Sky West. Okay, next slide, please. And what can you do to help us save Sky West? Well, you can talk to your friends. You can schedule a tour with us. You can learn more about it. Next slide, please. And, you know, if you have Facebook or Instagram, you can certainly go on Facebook or Instagram. If you have an area of expertise, if you know something that we don't know, we'd love to learn it, because that's what we're all about. We're all about saving this for our community, just like we want to save the San Lorenzo Theater. This is also important to us. Next slide, please. And this is what kind of bird, Randy? What kind of falcon? No, it's not. I can't remember. We just took this the other day, and it is a little falcon. It's one of the tiniest falcons. We took this picture the other day when we were walking. What a magnificent little bird, isn't it? Look at that. I know. So if anybody's got a comment or a question, we can hopefully answer it.
I'd like to thank you for your presentation. I apologize. I have a family obligation I have to go to, so I'm going to excuse myself, but I really am interested in this, and I do want to be a part of this. So
excellent. I'm going to be in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Claire, thank you. Well, presentation. But I do have a couple of questions. One, can you give me a little bit of the background as to, I assume the city of Hayward owns this property, and they also own the airport. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And when did the transition happen? When it was a golf course, what happened there? And
why? That's some of the slides I took out. Okay.
Okay.
So it was run by Hayward Area
Creation Department.
It was run by those guys. And what happened was they got a giant increase in their rent, and it was in 2021. They got a giant increase in their rent. They were asked to pay market value rent, and they didn't want to do it. They've been doing all this work in Ashland, and Ashland needed parks, so we can't blame them for wanting to go to Ashland and create parks in Ashland. And also the other deciding factor was over 70% of the golfers at SkyWest Golf Course weren't from this community. They're from outside the community because it was a fairly inexpensive golf course because it's a public golf course. So they just thought, you know, we're paying $47 per round to subsidize people to golf here, and we're getting a rent increase. We got to go. So that's what happened.
Next question to kind of background about obviously wants to help this land. Here, it's because Hayward's the Silicon, the people are who don't live here, or do they, do you know?
We considered part of the Silicon Valley. I
I believe
are we yet? Are we really at
so.
this
I
point?
think you are.
Well, you know,
So you've gotten zip codes from people who don't live here. They're just private plane owners, or is it business? What's
It's all the all I asked for was the zip codes. I didn't ask for it disaggregated in any way whatsoever. So, that's what I was given, just the zip codes of all the people who either own an airplane or use the airport.
City of Hayward thinks?
Well, the city of Hayward, I don't think, it's okay. So this is what happened at a recent city council meeting. They had a priority list of what their priorities over the next 2 years, and four out of seven of the city council members apparently said that looking at ways to save SkyWest was one of their priorities. So we have been given hope. So I think that it went from like one person on the city council was sympathetic to our cause to now that people know all the stuff, know about the Quimby Act, they know about the animals, they know about all this stuff. And we go to a lot of meetings and we send postcards and we have over 2,000 signatures, and we're really very vocal, and we're really in your face. That's how we are. You know, we're not rude, but we're there, we're present. And we just feel like this is important enough to our communities that that's how we need to be.
I totally agree. A couple of quick comments.
We hold on to our comments because we do have speakers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I want to also listen, hear what our speakers have to say, and then we'll go to the Zoom collective, and then we will make time for comments from the members, if that's
Okay,
okay
so I
with
can sit
you.
down for a minute.
Yes, you can.
Awesome.
Our first speaker is Liz. Make sure that you have 3 minutes, and
First bit.
please let us know what you have to say.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm not used to talking in front of people. The first photo you see in there is my son at the park fire. My son is a park ranger and a wildland firefighter. I showed you the mild picture. My big concern is open space. Within that photo, there's also some other information. Aerial view of trees at an acreage that was destroyed by fire. We re really have a problem in California now with open space. So I've been walking Sky West all through the pandemic. I've seen butterflies, hummingbirds. It really is rewilding. And I don't know if you guys are aware, all throughout the world, people are taking acreages and they're letting them rewild. And I think Sky West has been just an amazing, I've seen hawks, I've seen vultures, it's just rewilding there. And I want to make a comment about the butterflies. The butterflies are up front too. There's now clusters of them in the front part of Sky West over by Target, and they have been recorded. And it's a very peaceful place to walk. But the picture I wanted to show you is California has a problem. We've have millions of acres that wildlife and has been destroyed, ecosystem. We don't, I noticed with Sky West really quick that it is a great buffer to the airport's pollution and noise. And there is, you can sometimes smell the jet stuff. Also, I noticed with the atmospheric rivers that we had a few years ago, where we were really getting a lot of rain, all in the back area of Sky West, and the mitigation of water that was held for 2 weeks in the soil was amazing. So I really hope that we can save this acreage. I mean, it would be a great thing for the community that is a little economically not wealthy. But another quick thing I put in your packet, you can go to mytree.something.org. One of those pine trees, it's the information of what that pine tree is doing, the mature pine tree. And it's important that we save this piece of property.
Thank you very much for your comments. We'll make notes. We have two more speakers present, and then we'll go to outside the room. Dr. Maris would also like to speak on item two, which is
thank you again. Thanks for listening to all of us. And I'm also in favor of saving the open space in Sky West. We're seeing our buildings and our developments getting denser and denser. We're seeing, people spinning around in the street because they have nothing to do. And we can read about statistics about increasing mental health issues. And we really need that open space, like Mimi said, for the peace and tranquility and just to reset. So I think maybe what this commission could help with is in sort of connecting these different governmental entities and advocating to them and to who you all are representing, because there just seems to be a sort of a lack of really putting this on the table and talking about it, which is why Mimi has had to really work hard and exercise great leadership in bringing this to all of our attentions. So, it is owned by Hayward. Hayward acquired it from the feds, who donated it. I think it was after the war, when it wasn't needed anymore. And part of the initial requirement was that any development that happens there has to include environmental restoration. And I imagine maybe that's why this area has been preserved for this long. And it was so great that Hard was in there. And I just want to mention something that that clubhouse, if you haven't been in that clubhouse, or if you have, you know how beautiful it is. So it's got marble bathrooms, it's got a kitchen. Hard used to have a chef come in there, and people like my family, it was accessible, handicap accessible. So I could take my mom there, and I did for many birthdays, and we could feel like we were rich. We could look at the greenery, we could eat a gourmet meal, and it was really important to us. So I'm really sad about losing that. Money-wise, we pay for Hard for that special district, and we paid, as far as I know, for that building to be built. So for it now just to be tore down, I have a problem with that.
one of the reasons that Hayward says that they have to cut down the trees when they extend the runway is because of animal strikes. One reason they say that we can't have habitat is because of animal strikes. Well, I've looked at the FAA database on animal strikes, and I can tell you there have been no serious accidents. There are minimal, and where they happen are mainly at dawn and dusk, and where the plane is landing. So I mean, that's the reality of it. So I guess that's all I want to say. Except any help is appreciated for all of us, and I hope I can enjoy it with you someday. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Doc. Nee? Fine. Your time doesn't start until you get up there.
When they closed down the golf course like 5 years ago, I started walking out there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful out here. And we were also kind of social distancing. So we're like, this is a great park. And it really is. And the turtles are really cool. And you have two giant ponds, probably the biggest ponds in the city of Hayward. And, you know, the airport just wants to fill them all in. So that, to me, that is really sad. And I know other cities, Santa Clara has giant pieces of open space. Livermore changed their golf course into an open space. Palm Springs has done it. The one that Mimi mentioned in Antioch, East Bay Parks is partnering to make that an open space. So if it's good enough for all these other cities, why isn't it good enough for the unincorporated and for the city of Hayward? And San Lorenzo is right close to that. So it really affects us. I really don't want to see this stuff all destroyed. And they want to put in like 8 or 10 giant industrial buildings. And that's right behind these poor people's houses. That's pretty bad. That's pretty ugly to me. Also, the main road's going to be closed off. And when it's all kinds of craziness. So open space, you know, once it's gone forever. So why don't we try to save and protect that? And you as a committee, maybe you could write a letter to the city of Hayward if you come together that way. I suggest also, if you've never been out there, go ahead and walk as the sun's coming down. It's really pretty. The turtles, the little baby ducks, all the good stuff. Anyway, we could all use more parks. That's all I'm saying. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Anyone from the audience? Petra? I only had you down for the first, but please.
Hello, my name is Petra again. I just recently found out what was happening with SkyWest. I remember actually going to that clubhouse and eating there with my grandma, my family, gathering there. Really know what happened after, but in that moment, learning about it, actually walking in SkyWest, you see how it's a big priority to have these public domains where you don't have to spend money to be in there. In my generation, where there's a talk of the third space, place where you can just go in public, enjoy your time around companions without having to spend money on anything or feel forced to do anything. And I think when you look at that perfect balance of the coexistence of having these butterflies here, these dragonflies, these hummingbirds, I felt my inner child come out when I was walking through that area with my mom. I've never really been in a green space that humongous. And there were moments in time where it just felt breathtaking. I couldn't find the words looking around and seeing the horizon. And in those moments of silence where you didn't hear anyone test piloting their private plane, you could look around and take in all the sounds of the animals. You even had the ground squirrels running around. When my mother and I went there, we could find a hawk that was actually stalking. And I've never been that close to any of that. I'm nearby the San Francisco Trail. I actually remember going to the San Lorenzo Park when I was a kid. I used to call it the pond. I feel like that's what everybody calls it. And at the end of the trail, when we're coming around, I saw the duck pond right there. And it felt like a full circle moment, because as a kid, I would always see that rail track right over there. I'd see that fence. And I thought like, oh, this is an area I'm not supposed to go to. I can't go to. And to be on the other side of that fence and looking out into that park, into that parking lot, it just felt amazing that this was something accessible that I was experiencing with my family members. And I feel like a lot of children should experience that. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Very much. Very much.
We have two speakers online.
Okay. Let's go with first.
Maria, you can go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you again, commissioners and staff. I'm Maria Magallon, resident of District 3 and former PRH commissioner. I am speaking in support of the preservation of the SkyWest open space. I believe it's important because this area borders the unincorporated areas of Hayward Acres and San Lorenzo. There's also, as Mimi Dean mentioned, there is a lack of open space in the marginalized areas of Hayward. I also want to express my pride as a mother. Petra is my daughter. And one of the things we want to do is save these beauty open spaces and nature historic areas for the next generation. And hearing her speak and is wonderful to see the next generation move forward with this. Experiencing the monarch butterflies, they're coming in to overwinter, seeing the hawks, the ground squirrels, and nature all around is something that should be experienced by all. I ask that the commission please support the preservation of this open space and the efforts of the SkyWest committee, and to pass a proclamation, to issue a proclamation that can be used so that moving forward, this effort for Save SkyWest will be heard by the city of Hayward, by East Bay Regional Parks, and who knows, in a few years, we may be experiencing a beautiful shoreline area that will also lead up into areas of Castor Valley on the San Lorenzo Creekway. Thank you.
Thank you for those words and comment. Daughter's presence. We'll move on to the next speaker.
Leah Brew, you can go ahead, please.
Okay, thank you. Everyone hears about the Hayward Airport, and we all must bow down to the god of economic development, and that this airport obviously is such a huge, important revenue generator for the city. And nothing could be farther from the truth. If you look at all those hangars that they've built, and they even want to build more, the rentable hangar space is 20% of the land area. Most of it is non-rentable driveways and aprons and taxiways and this and that, so that you get very little revenue from the hangar space. And they have three or five years of wait list on those hangar spaces. That's not a sign of health. That's a sign that they're not even charging enough money for the rents, so that people are lining up to get the good deals. Maybe if they had real management, which obviously they don't, their managers would be jacking up those rents. Same with this idea for the industrial buildings. Did you notice that there's an airport nearby? When you build the giant industrial buildings that people dream of building, and so you can't build tall industrial buildings. There's something like a 40-foot height limit that Hayward has for buildings near the airport. So that kind of limits them. And then what about this idea that you should have industrial buildings should be separated from residential areas? You know, all those, they kind of have the airport in between. The industrial buildings are on the west side of the airport, and all the houses are on the east. Well, in this case, on that proposal, they're proposing to put industrial buildings next door to a bunch of residential houses. But of course, those aren't Hayward houses, so those are unincorporated houses, so they don't really count, do they? But I just look at the map, and they do count for me. It doesn't seem like a good idea to put industrial facilities next to residential areas. And then, let's just, the airport operations are not directly very profitable. They're barely making revenues, and but the city doesn't show it as a major profit center. The city believes that the airport contributes indirectly to the economy through job creation, aviation services, and supporting regional commerce. And all of that, we're here taking the noise and all and the air pollution, and all the wasted space, to support the regional needs. And these people who live next door are supporting the local air pollution and the local noise. The airport really has to start justifying its existence and start maximizing the utility of its operations. And people, who and look at all, it is creating externalities. It is creating a lot of bad things for the neighborhood, and the neighbors pay. The airport isn't paying, so we really need to, look at the airport and ask it to justify. The airport should justify itself and stop being a burden on everybody else. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Is there anyone else in the audience outside of the room?
I have one more speaker online.
Okay. Here, go ahead.
Bruce King, you can go ahead, please. Bruce, it looks like you're muted. Looks like Bruce has put his hand down.
Acknowledging that Bruce has put his hand down and that there is no one else in the audience, we'll have comments or any other questions from the commissioners.
San Jose has a small city-run airport, and many years ago, they allowed housing to come up against it, and now the people in the houses are suing the airport because of noise pollution and other pollution from the exhaust from the engines, and there's a strong move afoot that small airports that are surrounded by housing are going to be a thing of the future. They're not going to exist anymore. They're talking about moving them out of the area, and I think in probably 20 years, Hayward Airport will probably be one of those too that is developed, that's going to have to be developed into housing or something else, and those parks are needed for housing and for everything else, and so I think it's important that this open space be preserved and used for natural vistas and habitat for our plants and animals. Thank you.
Commissioner Willis, I have a number of questions and comments. First of all, I fully, as an individual, support this project. My first question is, has the city of Hayward done an environmental impact report yet?
There has been no report done yet.
That will be really
absolutely
to that point.
So we know that there's a announcement that's getting made at the airport and infrastructure meeting next Thursday, right? Thursday, November 13th. There's a special meeting of the infrastructure committee. We don't know what's going to be announced. We're hoping they're going to go save SkyWest. But we don't know.
Okay. So my other question, I mean, obviously open space is really, it's been acknowledged many times over that it's really important to people's physical and mental health, that it really improves it to have places to walk, to, you know, to breathe, to see green landscapes, et cetera, et cetera. So your presentation emphasizes the wildlife, but I would also emphasize the impact on people in San Lorenzo, that this would be really important for their physical and mental health as well, to have, you know, to have this open space right next door. Also would emphasize how your project backing up to Orolona Loma's horizontal, what do you call it?
Levee.
Yeah. That how does it enhance that levee, your property being this open space with the trees? How does that interact with what they are trying to do in terms of climate change? Also wanted to let you know that I did a little bit of research, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Trust for Public Land. Do you know
yes,
that organization in San Francisco? So one of their projects, they're an environmental nonprofit, and one of their projects is converting golf courses to open space. So if you haven't seen that, you might want to take a look at what they're doing. Obviously, Trust for Public Land buys up those spaces and then makes that conversion, but how they're doing that would be really, I think, important to what you're trying to do here as well.
Thank you very much. We are working with, we do have some, we've been doing some work with East Bay Regional Park District. We've also been in contact with John Muir Land Trust. We have not yet been in contact with the Trust for Public Land, but it's in our notes now. Okay, we're going to do it.
Okay. They're in San Francisco. And like I say,
yeah,
scroll down. They have many projects, but one specifically for converting golf courses to public open space.
Awesome.
So there might be some good ideas there. But my question is for Liz. I'm still a little bit unclear how, being that this is a City of Hayward property, I know it affects San Lorenzo and Hayward Acres, but what is our purview as a commission, and what are we able to do?
Since the it is not in the county's jurisdiction. It's in the City of Hayward's jurisdiction. You could consider it. It would be similar to other projects that you have voiced an opinion on within a city, like the Oak Knoll developments and for others that aren't coming to mind right now. So I want to remind you that this is today, it's listed as an informational item on your agenda, so you aren't able to take any action today. But basically the extent of your purview would be to say write a letter or something like that as an official action as a commission. So if you want to consider something like that, we could agendize it as an action item on your next agenda.
I'd like to put that on the agenda or see that on the agenda for our next meeting. Would that preclude us from drafting a letter to read and approve at our next meeting, or should we wait till the next meeting for us to do that?
Probably wait until the next meeting to do that.
All right. So let's please put on the agenda for our next meeting letter in support of Saving Sky West, and that will be on our agenda for our December meeting, and it'll be an action item. We can discuss it at that time.
You'd like me to come back with anything else that I learn in the next 5 or 6 weeks? Certainly could give you an update.
That would be fine. Whatever is easiest for you. I'm also thinking that anything you learn, you can certainly email to either Liz or Angelica,
okay,
and then we would be able to use that on our agenda, okay, and it would give you the trip.
I have to say there's so many things that I cut out of the slideshow. So I appreciate all your anything that you think of that could help me make it better. And I'm really listening to you, so thank you so much.
Thank you again.
I have a question.
And we do have one more
Yes.
question.
Commissioner Thomas, Liz, can you clarify if the Hayward Executive and Airport is outside of the Hayward Acres actual jurisdiction or not? Because if the reason I ask, because if the property does fall within the Hayward Acres jurisdiction, which is part of the District 3 that I represent, then I would actually challenge the notion that we. Property, if said physical property does fall within the district that we're appointed to represent, actually give a bit of wiggle room. So I'm just trying to clarify there.
It is the airport is outside of Hayward Acres,
Okay.
and it's entirely within the city of Hayward.
That's you. Thank you, Liz.
Killers.
No, it's kind of weird though, because Kennedy Park is actually part of the airport.
No.
So is that Hayward Acres or is that Hayward? I don't know because Bartlett is right across the street, right? So it's like really weird. So I'm gonna look at my unincorporated maps. And I'm going to get back to you.
Thank you very much. That will conclude item two on our
Thank you.
agenda. That was an informational item. Thank you very much. Thank you for all in attendance. We'll now go to an action item, and that's item three, a report back from our ad hoc nominating subcommittee, which I believe would be the two commissioners to my left, your right, if you're in the audience.
That is correct. And first off, while the term of chair or president of this prestigious organization or committee is has a 1 year term limit, there's no terms that they can successive terms. And so I think one of the critical things is we would like to know if you're willing to serve as chair or president 1 more year.
No.
Oh, then under those circumstances, is there anyone else that would like to serve as chair? No.
Commissioner Willis, if could you speak into the microphone,
Yes,
please?
I think I would ask that Jim maybe reconsider because he's done a fabulous job and I think he's
I
not
agree.
done yet.
Thank you for the comments about my looks. I believe we're of the same generation.
Well, be that as it may, my first choice would be that you reconsider and that you continue for another year, as you have so well guided us through this last year. If that's not possible for whatever reasons, then I think that the younger members of this commission.
Thank you, Linda. Our second choice was to have James, who had to escape for a birthday party, step up. And so that's a possibility too. Maybe he chose to do that intentionally. I don't know.
And just to clarify, and maybe you already know this, just to clarify that this is just for the nominations and not for the
That's
actual
correct.
elections. Yeah.
This is just a nomination.
So you could
We nominate him.
ask him next, you could nominate him today and
An abstention? Okay. Then I would like to nominate James as chair of this prestigious commission.
and Commissioner Felix second. That request.
Okay, so a motion has been made to present to Commissioner Farley that he, under consideration, for
He's been nominated.
he's been nominated for this prestigious position. Yeah. Okay.
I was just reminded that you also need to
the vice chair.
We'll ask if there are any public comments before you take your action.
Oh, yes.
Are there any public comments?
There's no one online.
So no one in the public wants to run for this either. Okay. So right now, that's our motion that we nominate Mr. Farley in absentia. Not much for family business. We'll take that up at our, we should vote on that right now. We should vote on that. Yes.
You can vote on the nomination and consider the actual election at the next meeting.
That'll be fine. Okay.
I have a question right quick. I missed last meeting, but did receive the email from our county council in regards of ad hoc committees and as being in potential violation of this ad hoc committee nomination and from county council?
It's my understanding that this committee, the nominating subcommittee, was created as an ad hoc committee. So this is it was done in accordance with the Brown Act.
Commissioners, did you guys all receive the same email?
We only talked between us and staff.
Okay.
And we're, that is not part of this item.
This ad hoc nominating subcommittee, its usefulness ceased as of this meeting. We've made our nomination. We've made our motion.
Continues until somebody is elected.
Well, yeah. So we still need a nomination for vice chair. And at the next meeting, when you presumably vote to elect your chair and vice chair, then the subcommittee will cease to exist till next year.
And I would like to nominate Commissioner Willis for vice chair.
Thank you. I appreciate your nomination. I in turn again then would like to nominate Commissioner Thomas, who's one of our younger members, and that would be great training for him to be the chair another time.
Commissioner Thomas, thank you very much, Commissioner Willis. I appreciate it. I am one of the younger members of the committee, and I am eager to learn in any shape or capacity. So whatever the more senior and experienced commissioners feel like is an appropriate role, I'm happy to step in.
Does that mean you accept the nomination as vice chair?
That's my political way of saying yes.
Okay.
All right, so we have a motion for Commissioner Farley as chair, a nominating Commissioner Farley as chair and Commissioner Thomas as a vice chair. That is the result of our nomination committee.
Something we have to vote on, or can we just leave it at that?
I believe it's listed as an action item on your agenda, but I believe the actual voting can happen at your next meeting when you actually
elect. Let's do that. I'd like Commissioner Farley here.
You don't want to railroad me?
To witness this. Okay. And that doesn't, to Commissioner Thomas's concern, it is an action item prompted by an ad hoc committee. We've discussed the time length of that committee, that ad hoc committee, and we'll take this up as an action item at our next meeting.
Correct.
Okay. On to item four of new business, and this is a potential action item. At our last meeting, Commissioner Willis discussed with Mr. Farley the idea of communicating and a potential ad hoc committee to place White Cotton Cottage, Nike Missile Site, and the Pioneer Cemetery on the National Register. I believe these three sites are on the State Register, and
for the state,
and they qualify for the State Register. So, do we wish to have this as an ad hoc committee? This is a potential action item, so we should discuss this at this point.
So just to clarify, your intention is to limit it to those specific sites. That's correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Question.
The reason you left off the Castro Valley Library, old Castro Valley Library.
Some of the question was that there are potential economic benefits to having sites on the National Register. And it's since the money was already allocated for the Castro Valley Library to repair and rehabilitate it, I felt that the emphasis would be on these other sites. Although I think it may be also important to include the Castro Valley Library at a later site. My intention was not to, was basically just to discuss the idea of would it make sense for this commission to explore a nomination. Those nominations take a lot of work and a lot of research to do. We have a lot on our plate already. So it was basically not to say that we would do something as a commission, but just to get some information amongst us if this was something that was a direction that we wanted to pursue. I also understand that because of that discussion, then we have a letter from county council saying
where that's not a topic for discussion today. The purpose of the item is just to reaffirm clarify what I understand to be your action from last time, and if you wish to create an ad hoc subcommittee, which would mean that it would be for a temporary purpose and with a limited time frame, that you would take the action to do that, to create the ad hoc subcommittee just to consider the specific properties and the potential for putting them on the National Register.
Point to clarify, to be placed on the National Historical Register, what would be required of this commission?
Well, I think that would be something that the subcommittee would explore.
Or we could, as a commission, discuss this in whole, in mass, at our next meeting, and not have an ad hoc committee.
Sure, if that's what you would like to do. I wasn't at your last meeting, so I'm not sure exactly why the subcommittee was discussed, but that's really what the topic of discussion is today. Is do you want an ad hoc subcommittee to look into this matter, or if you would like to have it on the agenda for the next meeting to discuss as a commission as a whole?
My thinking on this is that I could bring information to the planning department and to our next meeting saying what is involved in doing an application to put a property on the National Register, And then perhaps at that point, if we had a discussion and there were further actions to be taken, then we could form an ad hoc subcommittee. Steps. It's just my thinking on it. But so there would be no ad hoc committee right now, if that's what the commission thinks would work.
Melanie O'Brien from the County Council's office has raised her hand and would like to speak, if that's okay with the chair.
Yes.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify, based on that suggestion of, punting this down the road after bringing the requirements to your commission, you know, one of the key issues here is to make sure that not only are you identifying the proper sort of committee that should be ad hoc, as Ms. McGallagher said, that it'd be temporary and for only a certain duration, but that you agendize it. So if you're considering making a motion down the line at a different meeting to have an ad hoc subcommittee, it needs to be on your agenda.
Understood.
As I understand it, if Commissioner Willis would like to do some research and bring some more information for your commission to discuss as a whole at your next meeting, and then potentially consider forming an ad hoc subcommittee, we would just agendize it as discussion of this topic and consideration of formation of an ad hoc subcommittee and make it an action item. So you could take that action.
Commissioner Menard.
Yeah. I'm working in Fremont on a National Register nomination, and I've worked on other National Register nominations, and I know it's a lengthy process and very complicated and complex. And I think the information that needs to be generated to this commission to make a intelligent decision is more than one person can generate by themselves. So I would suggest that we form a subcommittee today to go out and independently do the research and present it to staff so that it's all in everybody's packet by next month, so we can make a more intelligent decision. And that would be to determine basically what's the advantages and disadvantages for these four sites to be on the National Register, and what it's going to cost, and all those kinds of things, or estimate of costs and estimate of the time value, time factors that are going to be involved. So I would suggest that it be a subcommittee that's appointed today. Thank you.
What I understand would this would be an ad hoc subcommittee.
Absolutely.
And that this ad hoc subcommittee would be one whose purpose would be to gather information on the steps towards making White Cotton Cottage, Nike Missile Base, and Pioneer Cemetery and the library, Castro Valley Library, the old Castro Valley Library, be placed on the National Historic Register. This committee would have a timeline for December.
Back information.
That information.
So I have two questions, Al. Since you've done this already, would you be willing?
I'll work with you on this.
Okay. And secondly, can we make it January?
Yes.
I know that Commissioner Farley has a vested interest in the Nike Missile Base on the National Register. So we would have three members of this ad hoc subcommittee. It would be good through January 2026. And we'll discuss, we'll catch that. The committee will be comprised of
Commissioners Menard, Farley, and Willis.
Allowed to have that many people?
Yes.
Yes, that's less than a quorum.
One comment. Temporary ad hoc committee, is there a specified time frame? Because I don't think that we'll be getting all the answers in the next 2 months, and I suspect that when the commission meets in January, that there'll be questions that they'll want the ad hoc committee to research and bring back at future times. Do we have to set a definite time zone, time limit on when, how long this subcommittee can function?
Melanie can answer that question.
Hi again. So you don't have to set an exact date, but you do have to specify when it would be, it would no longer be of use, right? When it will, when their role will cease. So you should say that tonight if you're concerned about it taking multiple months and not wanting to set a time frame. You know, you should say that when this research is complete, and that shouldn't be an ongoing behavior by that committee like you would a standing subcommittee. So you want to put some parameters on that.
When answer is complete as to whether we can or can't for each of the sites. And it's complete.
If I may offer this, I have some concerns about the analysis being hinged on multiple properties, because that could be different for multiple properties, and it could allow the ad hoc committee to essentially turn into a standing subcommittee with potential, you know, months or years of times because of the properties are different. So something you might want to keep in mind is to ask the purpose of the ad hoc subcommittee to have its purpose narrowly defined.
Can the temporary subcommittee morph into a permanent subcommittee?
So can an ad hoc subcommittee be a standing subcommittee, which would be subject to the Brown Act? That would require action by your commission to do something like that. So you could do that, but you would want to agendize that and you would want a reason for that. So that's a good thought. Maybe you find that your ad hoc committee isn't truly serving the purpose of an ad hoc committee. So you want to make it subject to Brown Act requirements as a standing subcommittee.
And that would require agendas and noticed meetings and all that.
Oh. I'd like to make a motion that we form a subcommittee of Willis, myself, and Farley, a temporary ad hoc subcommittee to research and develop proposals to put White Cotton Cottage, the Nike Missile Site, the San Lorenzo Cemetery, and the old Castro Valley Library on the National Register.
And again, we should ask for public comment before you take an action.
Is there any public comment?
A cemetery. So I'm glad that you're looking into that. I always feel like that poor cemetery has kind of literally fallen through the cracks, and that when it used to be under the Hayward Historical Society, we would actually go there, have open houses, we'd actually clean it. So it's just sad to me that we don't get in there anymore. And it's too bad there isn't another body that could kind of, like, twice a year we do an open San Lorenzo Cemetery thing. Because it's a really cool cemetery. It's got Meek, it's got the Llewellings, Robert's Landing family is in there, a whole bunch of other people. Anyway, so I just wanted to throw that out there. And the other sites sound great too, but I mean, I live in San Lorenzo, so I love that cemetery. I hadn't gotten into it until probably 5 or 10 years ago. I mean, I grew up there and it was just gated and just a mess. And then finally we were able to get in when I moved back from where I was living in Central Valley for a while, came back and then cleaning it and then seeing all the graves. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's like living history. It's really bizarre. Anyway, really cool pyramid one. I mean, you guys have probably been out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Would you mind reading back the motion that Commissioner Menard made?
I did not write it down verbatim.
But have we met all the criteria of an ad hoc subcommittee to research? Sardin, I threw that word in. You did not use the word research. But have we met all the criterion that would satisfy our legal representation regarding the Brown Act if we say that this committee is going to meet ad hoc and in January we'll get a report from them, and at that time we can determine whether or not it ceases to be an ad hoc committee and goes on to be a standing subcommittee? I've said a lot. Somewhere there was a motion in there too.
I believe the gist of it is basically you're forming an ad hoc committee that will function until January and then reassess at that time whether it could continue as an ad hoc subcommittee or possibly change to a standing committee, and perhaps the research that is done in the interim can help identify or help assess the time frame that would be necessary to do additional research.
I think you summed that up very well. Thank you.
Done good. I like that motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
The motion has been made by Commissioner Menard and seconded by Commissioner Felix. Let's have a vote.
Okay. Commissioner Thomas? Commissioner Willis?
Aye.
Commissioner Menard?
Aye.
Commissioner Felix?
Aye.
And Chair Patterson?
Aye.
Okay. The motion to create the ad hoc committee until
ad hoc subcommittee.
Subcommittee until January passes unanimously.
Heard that? Come in or come
That was actually our county council leaving the meeting.
Go good.
Okay. That must have been
okay.
Send y'all another email.
Okay. Given that it is 6 o'clock straight up and Commissioner Farley had a birthday party to go to, family business. Pardon me, I might have said too much. We'll move on to item I, old business, which has been continued from October 2nd. The first is the discussion of the Chouinard Barn on Palomares Road. This is an informational item. And Commissioner Willis, do you have an update?
I don't have any further information. I'd like to know if the staff does.
Yes, we do. Staff forwarded an email from East Bay Regional Park District about their fall community meeting on Saturday, October 25th, to hear updates and learn more about projects happening in Garin and Pleasanton Ridge Regional Parks. Staff was not available to attend this meeting and have not received additional updates from East Bay Regional Park District.
Thank you. Let's move on to item two, update on the historical survey project. Again, this is a staff update.
Good evening, commissioners. Just a brief update. So staff continues to work on the scope of work, and we expect to present the scope to your commission in either January or February.
January or February. Okay.
By the way, January is when that ad hoc subcommittee expires.
Sorry, just to insert something here that doesn't need to be worked out right now, but the regular meeting date for your January meeting would be New Year's Day. So to have a January meeting, I think it would be appropriate at the December meeting to discuss an alternate date.
Okay, very well.
Thank you, Liz.
Like February. Mills Act project, staff update, informational item.
We have no updates on this item.
Item four, potential tree ordinance project, staff update.
I believe at your last meeting, you were told that the county has received a grant to prepare a urban forestry plan. The RFP to hire a consultant for that project has been released and will close on December 1st. Staff anticipates selecting and procuring a consultant in early 2026. The project scope includes establishing a steering committee with key stakeholders. Once the project begins, the PRHC may, if interested, request at a future meeting that the commission designate a member to serve on the steering committee. So that is another future agenda item for your consideration.
We'll keep that as a future item, and we'll guess we can do that in 2026. Historical plaque at Meekland Avenue, information. And we should have all received an attachment from the county regarding historical plaque programs.
Just by way of introduction, staff reviewed the process and potential cost for installing a plaque in the public right-of-way on Meekland Avenue and determined that it would require completing an encroachment permit and issuing an RFP to hire one or more consultants for sidewalk preparation, plaque fabrication, and installation. This effort would also require significant staff oversight and management. Given the complexity and time involved, staff does not recommend pursuing this approach. Instead, staff proposes using available funds to establish a plaque program or similar. Staff will present several examples for discussion and consideration and requests your feedback and guidance. And Dominic has a few slides he wants to present to give you some information about this.
Hello again, Dominic Lucchese, staff planner. So as Liz mentioned, we just wanted to do some quick research into some existing plaque programs that other jurisdictions participate in or operate, just to kind of give you all a sense of what other jurisdictions are doing in this realm. So next slide, please. So the first jurisdiction that we looked at was the city of Livermore. So their city has budget to fabricate 3 plaques per year. The plaques are roughly 8 by 8 inches in bronze. You can see what they look like here on the slide. They have a title section, text body with description, and a commemoration date. Their program, the property owners will voluntarily apply. They'll fill out an application and send it in to the city. There is no fee to submit an application. Property owners are responsible for installing the plaques on the front of their properties, and the plaque needs to be visible from the public right-of-way. Plaques need to be approved by the Historic Preservation Commission. And interestingly, a property does not need to be in the city's resource inventory to be considered. Anybody can apply for a plaque. I did reach out to the staff planners there, and just an extra note, their annual budget for this program is about $2,000. Each plaque costs about $686, and they typically receive less than 3 applications per year. Next slide, please. So unlike the city of Livermore, Santa Barbara puts nearly all of the responsibility on the property owner. Only owners of properties that are on the official historic register can apply for a plaque. The city has an official plaque design, and property owners can basically purchase this plaque through a third-party vendor. They're 5 by 7 inches, they're cast in bronze, and on the low end, the plaques start at $218, which is an approximate cost. There are some options to get customized plaques, but if you want to deviate from that standard template, you do need to get the permission from the Historic Landmarks Commission. And the city does not pay for these plaques, unlike the city of Livermore. 100% of the cost falls on the property owner. Next slide, please. And this was kind of an interesting option that I had seen in a few other jurisdictions. So some jurisdictions are using QR codes kind of as an alternative traditional plaque program. So essentially, it's placards with QR codes that are placed at points of historical interest, and people with their phones can scan them. And oftentimes, they'll be linked to multimedia content hosted by the jurisdiction. So things like historic maps, photos, and background information. I found examples of these programs in Los Angeles, Danville, Virginia, and Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. These programs are usually funded through a mix of grants, city or private funds. And, you know, really the benefit of these QR code placards is that compared to the bronze plaques, they're relatively low cost and easier to implement. And so, for example, in Danville, Virginia, each marker costs $100. And that concludes my presentation.
I think San Jose Historical has it in their history park at Kelly Park. They have QR codes on them there. So, and I've experienced QR codes in other areas, and you can put a lot of information on a QR code. You open up a website and you can see all kinds of stuff. And plaques, especially bronze plaques, tend to get ripped off because of the metal and them, and so you're better off not to use a bronze plaque, or you can use a bronze-like looking plaque, but not bronze, and embed a QR code in it somehow, or maybe just even something either lower grade, like a plastic something. I'm supportive of the QR codes. I know that's not part of the issue today, but I like the idea of QR codes because our young people are the ones who don't know their history, and the QR codes are something that they're probably more inclined to look at.
Agreed. As a older generation walking the hills of Ashland, along with many people who were in wheeled devices, finding it extremely difficult to go up those hills, there were a number of bronze plaques of historical houses. But I do think that that is of an older generation. And the QR codes could also be utilized by teachers and instructors in class, as long as someone kept the website up to date. Always room for Mr. Shirt.
Matt, first of all, is there money in our budget to have a plaque program versus spent on the plaque? Money to do a plaque program? That's my question.
Well, that is what we would be exploring. What we've found, or more specifically, Angelica and Dominica found in their research, about putting a plaque in the sidewalk at Meekland is that it would, without getting into exact figures, that would cost more than it's likely to cost for a year of installing, you know, some form of these smaller plaques or QR codes or something like that. So basically what we're presenting is that we think you could get much more bang for your buck with a plaque program that would ask the property owners who have just put their property under Mills Act contract or something like that to put a plaque on the side of a building than hiring at least one, maybe multiple contractors to come in and, you know, cut the sidewalk and put in anchors and go through the whole permitting process and all that, which we've found it just seemed to kind of snowball and get more and more expensive.
Menard.
I was on this commission when that project at Meekland came up, and we, as I recall, allowed them to demolish the building, providing that they put a plaque on the property. Is that requirement still in effect, so that they would have to put a plaque on the property, and then we could put a plaque with a QR code on it that tells a lot of the history of it?
Basically, the county doesn't really have a mechanism in place to enforce that condition on the property owner, and the property owner is not willing to put a plaque on the property at this time.
That sounds like we need to provide or create a standing subcommittee on plaques for this commission to install plaques.
Well, I think that would actually be an appropriate idea if you want to go ahead with a plaque program, and this is just an informational item, so this is something that would have to be on a future agenda. But I think if you did have a plaque program, it would be appropriate to have a standing committee that would basically implement the plaque program. And of course, the details would have to be worked out.
So I will say that I would be very much in favor of a plaque program. And I think it makes a lot of sense. We don't have a lot of the way to enforce the person at the owner at Meekland, and then it's very expensive and a lot of time and energy go into that. That could be wearing a plaque. I will also say, just for my own, that the QR codes sound like a great thing for the next generation, but I don't think they're particularly elegant or beautiful. So that's just my two cents.
Can we put this as an action item on our agenda for our next meeting then? I've been on this committee where we tussled over the language and the what was literally going to be written on this Meekland Avenue plaque. It just seems like for months and months and months. And now we're at a point where it seems to almost have gone up in smoke. So I would like this as an action item, a plaque to discuss the idea of a standing subcommittee at our next meeting on the agenda about plaques and what to do. I know prior to my position, and certainly as a member, even prior before I was a member, this commission was concerned the Meekland property and how important it was to the history of Alameda County. And I just feel like, and so like to do something about it. So if we can get that on the agenda, thank you. We're going to move on to stipends, and we'll date, and then there's also an indication of staff update. Linda, here you go.
So I just recently noticed that Supervisor Miley in my district was recruiting members for the Eden Eden Mac, and is there more of a name than just Eden?
Eden Area Municipal Advisory Council.
Okay, so for that advisory council, and that the Eden Mac members would be paid $50 a meeting. So I would just like to say that might be a reasonable amount to be considered for this commission, $50 per meeting. As to what the county was, what they were doing regarding that issue.
And staff does not have any updates from the CAO's office. And just as a reminder, please submit any travel reimbursement requests soon as we're approaching the end of the year.
So can we, I would like to request that that whoever's supposed to be working on this, that someone would contact them and say, this has been a long time without getting any information back on what they're doing.
We contacted the agency director to speak to the CAO's office. So we can talk to her and see what,
if we could get a date back in which they might have some at least update on what they're doing, that would be really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you can have public comment.
I may have public time. This is regarding stipends for...
Yes.
Yes.
So I served on the Eden Mac, and, you know, I really think that commissions should have a stipend. I feel like it makes it, like, for me, it didn't really matter. You know, I'm a retiree. I have a nice pension. But you know what? In order to get younger people involved in the commissions, it's really important to give people a stipend. And we were considering a police oversight commission, and something that really angered me was the police oversight commission was going to get $100 stipend, but so many of the other commissions either get zero or they get $50. So I think everybody should get the same stipend, and I actually think it should be $200, because you know what? That is an amount of money that says, hey, you're serving on a board, you're serving on a commission, and your time is valuable. And that's how I really feel about it. So I'm all for stipends, and I think it gets people involved. Thank you.
Thank you. I should pause here. We've gone through six items of our old business, but I failed to ask if anyone is left in the audience that would like to speak about Chouinard Barn or Historical Survey or Mills Act or trees or Meekland Avenue plaque. We have heard from a former Eden Mac member regarding stipends, but is there anyone out in the audience there with a hand raised?
There's no one online.
Okay. Okay, let's move on. I was trying to think of something to say to that. Item 7, discussion of the letters to the Board of Supervisors in Castro Valley, MAC, supporting funding to preserve old Castro Valley Library, Lake Chabot, Nike Missile Base, and White Cotton Cottage, and San Lorenzo Pioneer Cemetery. The subcommittee, which is me, I still have not heard from Mr. DeVinny, so I have no update on that.
My impression is the letters already went out
some
time ago before the Board of Supervisors voted, so I'm not sure what we're supposed to be discussing about the letters.
Well, I think it was just to update you on what happened at the board meeting. The update I have here is that the economic and civic development staff presented updates on the old Castro Valley Library on October 9th for the board's direction. The board passed a motion to retain Old Castro Valley Library building for community and veteran use, identify funding sources and engage with HARD on possible partnership for operations and maintenance.
Did that vote include, just for clarification, did it include using the county money available? The $8.4 million, did they allocate that as a result of that vote? That's what my understanding was. But
no, in the case of White Cotton Cottage and Nike Missile Site, there were identified funding sources. For this, they did not have an identified funding source, but the board directed staff to basically find funding. So there isn't funding yet, but the staff is charged with finding funding for that.
For the other three properties that have identified funding, does that funding cover the cost of what the repairs and renovations would be?
Yes.
The board would just need, but the board still needs to vote on those properties, right? Whether to allocate that money. Is that correct?
I believe they are already did.
The board meeting that I attended was just to vote on the Castro Valley Library, old Castro Valley Library.
Right. The other properties were, I believe they were discussed at a different meeting. I don't remember offhand exactly what the motion was. I know they have identified funding and don't remember if the board officially voted to allocate that money.
That would be really helpful to know, because I know there was a lot of discussion amongst the board members about the costs, especially for the White Cotton Cottage. We could an answer to that to know if we need to.
Well, in light of that, that concludes item 8.2, because those are the three sites that we still have questions about. And so we'll leave that on for our agenda as a discussion and informational item for our.
The status of the allocating.
Commissioner Willis, if you could speak into the mic. So we.
Yes, I'd also like to keep on the agenda the old Castro Valley Library so that we are dated on what the efforts are to locate money for the old Castro Valley Library repairs and reparation. restoration of library. Okay.
So we'll move on to the Pauper Cemetery. Linda, do you have an update for us?
The Pauper Cemetery, but I would like to keep it on the agenda for a while, if that's okay.
Item 10 was Mr. Farley. He's not here. This was an informational item, so we'll keep that on.
Actually, Dominic, I think, has an update on that.
Yes. Item 11 is what we're on now.
Item 10, item 11. Okay, item 11, discussion of Center Street Bridge. I know Mr. Farley was concerned about this. Staff update.
So it is item 11.
11.
Sure what happened there, but yeah, so at our last meeting, there was a question about the demolition permitting process for the Center Street Bridge. And if the commission would have a chance to weigh in. So we reached out to Public Works to clarify, and they won't know the process for demolition until they get to the final design stage, which they are not at. If the bridge is listed as a historic resource, they would find that out during the environmental review. And depending on the type of environmental documents required, it may need to go through a public review. Especially because this bridge is highly used, that is most likely there will be some type of community input process.
Okay, so at the very least, there'll be an environmental review that would include community input, evaluation?
The very least, there will be an environmental review process, and most likely that will include a community outreach. Okay. Component.
Item 12, discussion on the Sunol Bridge. Commissioner Menard, I believe you have an update for us.
I do. I have the plaque.
Hey.
Under Freedom of Information Act, I contacted Caltrans several years ago and got nowhere. And then this commission harassed me enough that I reintroduced myself to Caltrans. And Caltrans called me and said, or emailed me and said, oh yeah, we have that plaque. It's in Oakland. Come on down and pick it up. So I went down to Oakland to pick it up, and it was not there, and nobody knew about it. And I had to call around, and I was there about an hour and finally ran into somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody, and called somebody in Pleasanton who had the plaque. And so I says, do you have the plaque? And he says, yes. Can I get it? Yes. I'll be over tomorrow. And so I went over with my friend, and we picked up the plaque, and I put it in the back of my car. And my intent is to, I wanted to first show it off to you, and then I'm going to give it to the Washington Township Museum of Local History in Fremont, because the Highway 84 is mostly in Fremont, and that seems appropriate place for the plaque. And so if I'd gotten two, I'd have given one to the Hayward Area Historical Society, but I never got the second one. And the person I talked to in Pleasanton said, I told him, I said, I'm pretty sure that there was two plaques on that bridge. He said, no. Yeah, I was a project engineer on that. There was only one. I know a historical resource person that reviewed that bridge, and there was a plaque on both ends of that bridge. And so whatever happened to the other one, nobody knows. But well, I've got the plaque, and I'd appreciate you all to look at it back there. And I think we can take this off the agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that succinct information. We'll go straight to item J, commission announcements. Any comments and reports? We'll start on my far left.
Comments, no reports.
Comment. I thought last meeting we were going to do an ethics training or something like that, and I have seen nothing further, and I don't see it on the agenda. What's happening?
Well, it was determined some years ago that as an advisory body, you did not need to take the ethics training. I don't know if you're thinking about the Brown Act training you had at the last meeting. I can follow up with Angelica and see if she knows more than I do.
Brown Act training referred to a lot of things that were covered under the ethics training that I took years ago. And I think it would be beneficial, even though it's not required of us, I think it would be beneficial. It was all online for us to do it while we're online, scrolling around, having a cup of coffee or whenever, or beer or whatever we're doing, and go through the tests and stuff. I thought it was very educational. And I know, as I recall, you had to get 100% right to move on to the next agenda item. So it was challenging. And I think it's advantageous to us because a lot of it deals with the Brown Act aspects of this commission.
And actually, I'm sorry to interrupt. I neglected to let you know that there is a raised hand online, I assume, for the previous item.
Sure, bring them on board. Let's hear what we. That was my fault. So, thank you.
Hello, Dr. Ann Maris here, calling about item H, the Center Street Bridge. I
Correct.
Think it was.
Yeah,
H10.
That was item 11. Yeah, H 11.
H 11. H 11. So, I just want to. I was surprised to hear it's being demolished. I wasn't aware. And I don't think having an environmental impact report done lets the community know what's happening, and that is a historical bridge. It's a historical bridge over the San Lorenzo Creek, but also it's historical that the bridges always get replaced over the San Lorenzo Creek because the San Lorenzo Creek has historically been so wild and knocked so many bridges down. So I'm not against that it should be demolished and rebuilt, but it is historic, so I hope that you keep track of it and that part of it is acknowledged. There's a whole, you know, flood history in that B Street, Center Street, Groveway area. So I'd appreciate it if you'd keep it on your agenda and so we know what's happening. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will. As long as I'm chair. Thank you, Dr. Mayor. And not much to report really on the Center Street Bridge at this point in time until they do that environmental review. But we'd like to be apprised of that review. And I think the commission is extremely interested. Certainly Commissioner Farley is, but I think we all are interested in noting and addressing and then close to this commission's vest as far as the historical significance it presents for that section of Hayward. I have no comments or reports other than that, Commissioner?
No reports tonight. Thank you.
You have any comments?
Oh, yes. Commissioner Thomas, just quick comments. I have been in contact with a few of the elected mayors who are in the district that I represent, and we have been discussing current activities and regards to the ICE raids and ICE activity that is happening on city and county parks, lands, and areas. So I just wanted to state that for the record, I am in contact with some elected officials. us alternative ways of utilizing city parks as well as the owned buildings and putting out potential referendum to bar them from being used for ICE activity or anti-immigrant efforts.
Thank you for your work on that too. Any staff or liaison reports?
I just wanted to pass along, you all received a link to a survey put out by the State Parks Department regarding the Alameda Tesla State Park that's being planned. The survey has been extended and will remain open until November 30th. So if you would like to do the survey and have not yet done it, then you still have some time.
I believe at our last meeting, Commissioner Felix raised a question regarding her suitability regarding being a member of this commission as well as being City of Hayward Commissioner, and i.e. conflict of interest. Had there been any follow-up or anything from your end as far as figuring out whether or not that was a conflict of interest?
Receive it, stating that it wasn't a conflict on this end, but I have to check with the City of Hayward. I put in a
okay, thank you. Thank you. That takes care of that. What? So do we have anyone in the audience with the raised hand or anything?
We do not.
Okay.
So, sorry, one thing. Agenda item for future meetings. Can we put on there, thank you, Liz, for next meeting, discuss January's appointment? Because Liz brought that up, and that's all I'm hearing in my mind is January 1st is our meeting for that month. Thank you, Liz.
That's when we vote. So what are our we did put on the agenda for our next meeting. I know it was the ad hoc subcommittee. We have that on the agenda. What else do we have for next month's agenda?
I don't have a complete list, but I will go back through the discussions from this meeting.
It'll be in our draft. Okay. I know that. We'll talk about January, the January meeting. We'll get updates on the get updates as we need. And adjourned.